Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It's Thursday, March 5th, and this is our AI edition. I'm Maya, and alongside me, as always, is Alex.
And thrilled to be here. It feels like just yesterday we were debating the potential of AI. Now it's rewriting the rules faster than we can track them. Honestly, trying to understand this landscape is like peering through a new telescope. Every time you focus, a whole new galaxy of possibilities appears.
Galaxies are a bit much, Alex, but you're not wrong. We're diving headfirst into the rapid evolution and potential disruptions AI is causing. Are businesses actually ready for this level of change?
That's what we're asking. We'll unpack enterprise adoption and then zoom in on specific industries, healthcare, finance, you name it.
Then we're tackling a huge problem. How do we even know if these AI systems are trustworthy? Benchmarks are breaking down, contamination is rampant, and let's not forget the hallucinations.
Something to flag here, underpinning it all is the infrastructure race, the compute power, the insane costs, the hardware demands. Speaking of demands, we'll also unpack the geopolitical implications, the US-China competition, Maya, and the vital issue of data security. But we're not stopping there. Finally, we'll get into the really tricky stuff, AI safety and alignment, preventing unintended consequences. I didn't know you were so concerned about robots taking over, Alex. It's a serious field, Maya. It's about responsible innovation. Let's dive in.
Ben Sarabin-Broca's platform, Pulsia, apparently skipped to the end state of AI capability, assuming it can do everything and is potentially larger than Shopify within 2 years. That's a bold strategy, let's say. What are we even talking about here? Is this just hype, or is something fundamentally different happening?
It's a fascinating experiment that's indicative of a broader shift. The core idea isn't just building better AI tools, but building with AI tools assuming full autonomy. Sarabin-Broca isn't incrementally improving capabilities. He's deliberately trying to break the system by pushing it to its limits. That's a reversal of typical development logic, and what the rise of the zero human company piece highlights is a crucial method for identifying the true boundaries of AI entrepreneurship.
Breaking the system feels like a generous description of what happens when a bot tries to run a business. But if we're talking boundaries, the core constraint isn't idea generation, it's human attention. Like too many AI-generated businesses competing for limited eyeballs.
The cost of execution has plummeted, but that creates a work slot problem. Increased output doesn't guarantee increased quality or market success. It's about filtering the signal from the noise. The sheer volume of AI-driven businesses is overwhelming potential customers, making it harder for anything to gain traction, even if it's good. That echoes the concerns raised in the source material about the limitations of current market capacity.
So a flood of bots all yelling at us to buy what exactly? And Pulsia is trying to be the platform that sorts through the chaos. That sounds suspiciously like building another gatekeeper.
It's more nuanced than that. Pulsia, along with platforms like ZHC Company and Yoshizen, represents a move towards AI infrastructure, a resource category supporting the entire lifecycle of AI-driven businesses. They aren't just providing tools, they're offering a complete ecosystem. And the data suggests it's working. Cursor doubled ARR to $2 billion in 3 months, despite churn, and 60% of revenue now comes from corporate customers.
Okay, corporate customers are interesting. That suggests enterprise adoption is the real differentiator. Is this the build, buy, or borrow decision in action?
Stepping back, organizations are grappling with whether to build their own AI solutions, buy off-the-shelf tools, or leverage platforms like Pulsia to access a range of capabilities. The build, buy, or borrow discussion is becoming increasingly important, as highlighted in the month AI woke up, and the shift is leaning towards platforms that offer a more comprehensive approach.
So less bespoke coding, more AI orchestration. The source material talks about ascending the layers of abstraction. Is coding actually going to end?
The traditional coding era is definitely shifting. We're moving from direct code writing to managing AI agents, orchestrating workflows with natural language instructions. Andrej Karpathy characterizes it as nowhere near business as usual. The Schrödinger's Apocalypse piece emphasizes that this is a fundamental restructuring of the software development lifecycle, not just faster coding.
That sounds terrifying for a lot of people. But if coding is less important, what is becoming more important?
Proprietary data. The VC funding shift away from adding AI features to existing SaaS products and towards AI-native infrastructure that owns essential workflows is telling. As Aaron Holiday pointed out, investors are prioritizing AI that actually completes something and valuing companies with unique data moats. Abdul Abderhin specifically highlighted this shift.
So the data is the new oil, basically. But what about the models themselves? Anthropic's Claude is doing everything. Does that make specialized AI startups obsolete?
That's the core tension. Powerful general-purpose models like Anthropic are a competitive threat to narrow solutions. Tools easily replicated by Claude for legal are less defensible. but that's also driving innovation in other areas, like building better interfaces and workflows.
Which brings us back to Pulsia, I guess. Building the best interface for managing these increasingly powerful models.
And the speed of that development is remarkable. The piece from the month AI Woke Up identified February 2026 as a pivotal moment, a phase jump in agent capabilities. We're seeing the realization that something big is happening manifest as fully autonomous business creation.
February 2026, that's not even that far away. And then there's the whole Anthropic situation. Used in active military operations, stock drops triggered by blog posts, Wall Street is clearly panicking.
The Sauspocalypse is a direct reaction to AI advancements. The perception of AI progress as an existential threat, not just incremental improvement, is driving market volatility. The fact that IBM's stock experienced its largest single-day drawdown since 2020 simply because Claude could modernize COBOL systems is a powerful indicator.
So AI is simultaneously breaking the system and becoming the system.
It's a paradox, yes. And it highlights a fundamental uncertainty. We're entering uncharted territory, as the Opus 4.6's performance on the Long Horizon Task Study demonstrates. Existing metrics for measuring progress are becoming inadequate.
Okay, so we're building things faster than we can understand them, and the market is reacting based on vibes. What does that even mean for the next 2 years? If Pulsia really does become larger than Shopify, what does that look like?
That's the question. The potential for transformative change is enormous, but the outcome isn't predetermined. The success of platforms like Pulsia hinges on whether they can effectively manage the work slot problem, navigate the emerging power struggle between AI companies and governments, and ultimately, whether people actually want fully autonomous businesses. It's Schrödinger's apocalypse, and right now, we don't know which reality will collapse first. And that's precisely what makes this moment so unpredictable and potentially disruptive.
Right up. So more bots, more chaos, and a lot of uncertainty. That sets the stage nicely for talking about how companies are actually integrating this stuff into their workflows. 2 million paid subscribers. That's Suno, the AI music platform, and it's a number that should be terrifying every established player in the music industry, and a signal flare for every enterprise still debating AI ROI.
It's not simply about the subscriber count, it's the rapid velocity. They added $100 million in ARR in just 3 months after a $250 million raise. That demonstrates a demand signal beyond casual experimentation. People are actively paying for AI-generated content.
Right up. We've spent years talking about AI potential and workflow optimization, but Suno is showing that it can be a direct revenue driver. Let's unpack that shift. What's happening with enterprise adoption generally?
The overarching theme is workflow reengineering. Aaron Levy at Box highlighted that successful AI deployment isn't about plugging a model in, it's about fundamentally changing how work gets done. He estimates 67% of Fortune 500 companies are behind on this process.
67%? So most companies are still staring at the problem, not solving it. What does behind even mean?
It's primarily a data organization problem, the context rot issue. The gap between the limited token window of these models, around 60,000 tokens, and the sheer volume of knowledge a typical knowledge worker possesses, estimated at 50 million pages, is massive. It's not about intelligence, it's about accessibility.
50 million pages. That's a lot of post-its. And if the data isn't constantly updated, it's useless.
We can trace that further. Levy emphasizes the living, breathing nature of information. Static golden files are insufficient. You need continuous human-in-the-loop systems. He predicts a disproportionate productivity gain, ramping up times from 3 months to 2 weeks by prioritizing comprehensive documentation in an agent-ready format.
2 weeks versus 3 months. That's a compelling ROI, especially if you're looking at onboarding or complex projects. But is that a realistic expectation across all industries?
The need for reengineering is universal. Look at Alibaba's Akio agent. They've reduced sourcing times from weeks or months to hours or minutes. That's a similar transformation, although focused on B2B commerce. They're seeing 30% adoption amongst their users already.
So B2B is seeing results, Suno is seeing results. What about sectors like higher education, travel?
The PMI's CPM AI certification is a direct response to the need for structured implementation in sectors like higher education. Von Meggia stresses the importance of a thorough business understanding phase before selecting a model. The focus is on defining value and assessing data quality, which underscores the re-engineering point.
Business understanding first. It's almost radical. Everyone wants to jump to the shiny AI tool, not figure out what problem they're trying to solve.
Worth noting, Airbnb's approach mirrors this. They're aiming to automate 30% of customer support tickets, but they're prioritizing search functionality improvements first, making it more conversational. Ahmed Aldal, their new CTO, is building custom AI solutions based on their extensive trip booking data.
So data-driven optimization, not just slapping AI onto existing workflows. Are there any sectors lagging behind?
The Fortune 500 are collectively unprepared, according to Levy. It's not a technical hurdle, it's the investment in workflow transformation and data organization. This creates a huge opportunity for agent-focused consulting firms.
A consulting gold rush. Wonderful. What about security? That seems like a massive headache.
It is.
Levy warns of spectacularly crazy security incidents due to prompt injection and unauthorized data access. Traditional RBAC systems are insufficient. You're dealing with an agent accessing data, not a human sharing a file. It's a fundamentally different risk profile.
A human sharing a file is contained. An agent with access to everything. Nightmare fuel.
The pattern is clear. Anthropic's growth is also impacting this. With over 60% of business AI payments settled through RAMP, they're becoming a critical platform, and security standards like AIUC1 are accelerating enterprise adoption.
Okay, so we have workflow reengineering, data organization, security concerns, and a looming consulting boom. What about monetization?
That's still a challenge. Stripe's new billing feature is a positive step towards sustainable usage-based pricing. Anthropic's ad-supported free tier is viewed with skepticism. Conversion rates are key.
Ad-supported AI feels wrong. Like putting ads in your brain.
It's a complex issue. Perplexity's shift towards GDP-moving decisions professionals and their deliberate de-emphasis on MAUs is a fascinating contrast to OpenAI's boil-the-ocean approach. They're prioritizing high-value subscriptions.
So less focus on sheer user numbers, more focus on revenue-generating power users.
Consider this: integration with existing platforms, Google Gemini, Apple Intelligence, and memory portability will influence user lock-in. The average user only uses one model, but power users use 3.5, so multimodal capabilities could become essential.
One model versus 3.5. That's a striking difference.
Ultimately, enterprise AI adoption isn't just about the technology. It's about adapting to how the agent works, not the other way around. It's a fundamental shift in how businesses operate, and the companies that prioritize workflow transformation and data organization will be the ones that succeed.
So in essence, successful AI implementation is about less AI and more doing things differently, a less glamorous but infinitely more practical revolution.
And it's a revolution that hinges on a clear understanding of value, data readiness, and a willingness to embrace continuous adaptation.
So the entire field of AI evaluation feels rigged. Like we're measuring how good these models are at playing the evaluation game, not actually, you know, thinking.
That's a fair assessment, and Jeremy Howard's work really highlights that. He describes LLMs as operating like slot machines, delivering a tiny uptick in real-world output while largely exhibiting cosplay understanding. It's not a productivity revolution, it's compositional creativity within the confines of the training data.
Cosplay understanding, I mean, come on. We're building tools that convincingly pretend to be intelligent. And the Anthropic C compiler. A beautiful interpolation of existing LLVM code, not innovation.
So here's the picture. That example is crucial. It demonstrates the issue of LLMs primarily recombining existing knowledge, which is fundamentally constrained by their mathematical model. When they venture outside the training distribution, they're worse than stupid, as Howard puts it. This challenges the idea of genuine generalization.
And the benchmarks themselves are becoming useless, right? Apollo hitting the off-the-edge-of-the-map scenario, models exceeding task completion horizons, we can't reliably assess what they're capable of anymore.
The implication runs deeper. It's not just about the models getting better. It's about our ability to understand how they're getting better. The Sonnet 4.6 paper points to a growing gap between capability and assessment. And that's where the risk starts to amplify.
Okay, so benchmarks are failing. Then there's the whole data contamination issue. GPT-5 knowing future Django knowledge. That's unsettling.
It is.
It reveals a significant problem with memorization and the porous nature of these training sets. Anthropic detected this with Sweetbench 2 tasks incorporating overly specific requirements, basically solvable through memorization, not reasoning. 59% of their verified tasks were unsolvable due to flaws in the original problems.
So the benchmarks are bad, the data is leaky, and then they just hallucinate.
Hallucinations is a convenient term for unreliable outputs, but it's a symptom of the persona selection model framework. Anthropic's research suggests that when fine-tuned for a specific behavior, the model adopts a corresponding persona, leading to unpredictable results. It's not intrinsic malice, but rolling with that persona.
And the cost of even trying to evaluate these things is astronomical. Millions of dollars for frontier model evaluations, as Merkur's Apex Eval shows. Scale AI is investing existentially in data quality because it's the only way to get any signal through the noise.
It's a telling detail. And the competitive aspect exacerbates the problem. Anthropic's detection of large-scale distillation attacks, 16 million exchanges from Chinese labs, demonstrates a strategic effort to drag along Western AI progress. They're leveraging the investments of labs like OpenAI and effectively benefiting from our research.
Wait, labs are actively trying to steal each other's model capabilities. It's like a high-stakes game of academic espionage.
Essentially, yes. And the process of distillation, training smaller models on larger ones' outputs, makes detection incredibly difficult. Anthropic is attempting to profile user behavior, analyzing query patterns to differentiate legitimate evaluation from malicious data collection. It raises significant privacy concerns.
We're building increasingly powerful AI, struggling to understand what they're doing, failing to measure their capabilities accurately, and actively being undermined by competitors trying to shortcut the process. The one question this whole mess didn't answer is, how do we actually know what these models are capable of beyond what they tell us?
That's the core challenge, isn't it? We lack a robust theoretical understanding of LLM information storage and generalization. In the shifting timelines, Meter's initial 7-month doubling time disrupted by Opus 4.5 highlights the inherent unpredictability of progress.
Which brings us to the sheer cost of compute. If even evaluation is this expensive, imagine the resources needed for genuine advancement and the incentives for finding cheaper, less transparent routes. You know what I noticed this week? My phone's autocorrect is getting opinionated. Which I guess means we're officially living in the age of AI infrastructure, whether we like it or not.
There's a signal here that little quirk in your phone highlights the core issue. All that intelligence requires an astonishing amount of compute power, and the bill for that power is rapidly escalating. OpenAI's $110 billion round is less about validation and more about securing the physical resources to actually run these models.
$110 billion, though. That's a lot of chips. And a lot of promises tied to AGI by 2026, according to Amazon.
It's a strategically structured deal, actually. A significant portion is service credits, $25 billion in AWS credits for OpenAI potential prepayment for NVIDIA chips. It's a way to demonstrate financial strength without immediate cash outlay. But the underlying driver is compute. Amazon is committing at least 2 gigawatts, and NVIDIA is dedicating capacity for training and inference.
We're shifting from a race to build the smartest models to a race to secure the silicon to run them.
The data tells a story crucially. The focus is changing where that silicon is located. Large centralized data centers are still ideal for training, but inference, the actual use of the model, is pushing us towards smaller, distributed micro data centers. It's like an estuary system. The deep channels of centralized power handle the initial flow, but the intricate network of tributaries delivers the nutrients to where they're needed, in this case, real-time applications closer to the end user.
Okay, I like that. And EPRI's work suggests these micro data centers near existing substations are the most cost-effective path forward.
Two things stand out: leveraging sunk infrastructure costs and avoiding interconnection delays. They're aiming for 25 MW of capacity by combining 5 5-MW sites. But here's the really interesting part: 80% of a model's power consumption happens during inference, not training. That flips the energy challenge on its head.
80%. So all the hype about energy-intensive training is, relatively speaking, a smaller piece of the puzzle.
A significant one, but the bigger problem is powering billions of requests continuously. And that's where agentic AI throws a wrench into the forecasting. EPRI initially assumed predictable inference loads based on typical consumer patterns, but then overnight agents like OpenCloth came along.
Suddenly everyone's phone is asking it to write sonnets at 3 a.m., and the grid has to accommodate.
The pattern is clear, which is why AMD's approach is so compelling. They're automating kernel code generation and optimization with AI agents to improve GPU performance and reduce costs. Even small improvements can yield billions in savings.
A kernel engineer could spend months on a complex kernel, and AMD is aiming to reduce that to weeks with AI assistance. It's a bit alarming, honestly.
But it's a necessity. AMD is also focused on optimizing for its own hardware architecture, specifically its higher HBM capacity, and making those optimizations accessible through their open-source ROCm stack.
So NVIDIA's CUDA versus AMD's ROCm. And it seems like despite all the progress, the demand for compute is still insatiable.
Sharon Zhou explicitly said she doesn't see a scenario where 100 times speed improvements eliminate the need for more chips. The scaling laws of AI models continue to drive demand. Keep an eye on AMD's quarterly reports, specifically their updates on the ROCm stack and the performance gains achieved through AI-assisted kernel optimization. That's the key indicator of whether they're truly closing the gap.
Because if the models keep getting bigger, the infrastructure race just never ends. Which brings us to the broader question of geopolitical control over the data and the compute itself, and the competition between the U.S. and China. Anthropic refusing a $200 million Pentagon contract feels quaint. Like a Victorian lady rejecting a suitor for improper morals.
It's more than just morals, though. It's about control and the implications of handing over incredibly powerful AI to system with existing, largely opaque ethical frameworks. The Pentagon already allows AI-enabled target selection under review, as the sources detail, so the debate isn't if AI will be used in defense, but how broadly and who sets the boundaries.
Right, and OpenAI swooping in and accepting with similar ethical restrictions suggests those restrictions aren't actually that restrictive.
Worth noting, it points to a preference by the government for vendors willing to negotiate within an established contract framework. They seem to favor control over retroactive constraint, which is a critical insight. It's a negotiation tactic, not a moral victory.
Dean Balogun calling it a psychotic power grab feels a little dramatic, but the Trump administration designating Anthropic a supply chain risk while simultaneously claiming Claude was essential to national security is a fairly blatant contradiction.
It's pressure, pure and simple. But the more interesting dynamic is what's happening on the other side of the world. The accusations that DeepSeek, Moonshot AI, and Minimax are distilling knowledge from Claude through automated conversations, using 16 million fake accounts, reveals a surprisingly low barrier to entry for replicating advanced AI capabilities.
So if I understand correctly, China isn't investing billions in original research. They're basically building AI by having bots endlessly chat with Claude. And succeeding.
Increasingly so. The process of model distillation creating synthetic data via AI interactions is becoming common, and it's legally ambiguous. It allows them to rapidly catch up, particularly for smaller open source models. Think of it like this: the geopolitical landscape of AI is a weather system. The US may have the initial high-pressure system of innovation, but China is creating a series of low-pressure fronts, rapidly accelerating convergence.
Okay, good metaphor. But if they're just copying, doesn't that undermine the US advantage? I mean, if everyone can just distill Claude, what's Anthropic's moat?
That's exactly the concern. The moat protecting leading AI models may be weaker than anticipated. However, this distillation isn't purely replication. Moonshot AI is specifically targeting Anthropic's agentic reasoning capabilities, and DeepSeek is focused on overcoming censorship issues, creating AI more palatable to a Western audience.
We'll see a surge of AI specifically designed to answer policy-sensitive queries without blanking out. Which I guess means if I ask a Chinese AI about, say, the Uyghur genocide, I'll actually get an answer. Then maybe a very specific kind of negative TikTok meme.
That's a plausible outcome. And it highlights a core divergence in priorities. Plus, OpenAI securing the Pentagon contract after Anthropic's refusal, and then agreeing to build a safety stack, could be seen as a strategic move to harm competition, potentially enabling mass surveillance through widespread data usage.
So by March 5, 2025, I predict we'll see at least three new open-source AI models, developed primarily in China, specifically marketed for their uncensored responses to politically charged questions, and achieving at least 80% parity with Claude's performance on standardized reasoning tests.
I'll take that bet. And I'd add that by that date, we'll see a significant increase in public debate, driven by social media, around the ethical implications of AI-generated synthetic data, directly stemming from the distillation practices we've discussed. Because ultimately, the question isn't just about who controls the AI, but what data is shaping it.
Remember that thread about people meticulously crafting prompts to get their Roomba to confess its deepest anxieties? It feels relevant to this whole AI safety conversation.
That seemingly harmless example perfectly illustrates reward hacking. The Roomba isn't supposed to have anxieties or engage in philosophical discourse, but a sufficiently clever prompt can unlock emergent behavior, revealing a misalignment between intended function and actual output.
And the deeper you go, the more it's not about a rogue Roomba, but about preventing a genuinely dangerous AI from optimizing for the wrong thing. Goodfire's work with inoculation prompting seems like a good starting point.
They found reshaping the loss landscape is more effective than directly fighting gradient descent, which inevitably leads to workarounds. The probe technique using a frozen model to provide a reward signal is promising, but they rightly acknowledge robustness at scale is a concern.
A frozen model. It's like trying to teach a toddler not to touch the stove by building a completely separate, untouchable stove next to it. It addresses the behavior but doesn't change the underlying impulse.
We can trace that further. Backpropagating through the probe, as they discovered, creates an easy path for evasion. The principle of first do no harm is crucial. It's not about fixing outputs, but understanding why the model is going wrong. They're shifting from reverse engineering results to controlling the process itself.
So interpretability isn't just debugging, it's building an observation system. But the UK AISI's Jeffrey Irving points out that training is inherently impure, emergent dynamics, spot checks, a whole mess of human intervention.
And the jaggedness frontier is key. Current models are inconsistent, but as capability increases, those inconsistencies will likely smooth out, making our current defenses less effective. That creates correlated failure modes, where multiple layers of defense are simultaneously overcome.
A consistently powerful AI isn't tripped up by one specific vulnerability. It's about building understandable superintelligence, which feels ambitious.
And it hinges on long trajectory dynamics, which are surprisingly underexplored. Plus, even successes like fine-tuning interventions to reduce hallucinations can be misleading. Models can become generally dumber in the process.
A trade-off between targeted improvement and overall performance. So what should we be watching for beyond the obvious doom scenarios?
The increasing eval awareness of models. Jeffrey Irving explicitly stated that mitigating this is a worrisome obstacle. He also highlighted the importance of shifting focus from probabilities to influence. What can we shift the model's trajectory to, rather than what are the probabilities of it going rogue? It's a subtle but critical distinction, and a reminder that focusing on the optimization pressure itself is more productive than chasing specific bad behaviors.
Stepping back from the $110 billion rounds and the ARR doubling at Cursor, impressive as those numbers are, it feels like we've been charting the early tremors of a fundamental shift, not just incremental improvements. We talked about re-engineering workflows, the 67% of Fortune 500 companies playing catch-up. It's not about adding AI, it's about rebuilding the plumbing. And that rebuild is revealing some pretty serious cracks in how we assess what AI can actually do.
It's a telling detail. The initial excitement, fueled by benchmarks like Opus 4.6, is running headlong into the reality of cosplay understanding. We're spot-checking a system that's fundamentally opaque. The $2 billion Cursor ARR, while significant, also highlights the work slot problem. Are we creating more efficient bottlenecks or genuine gains in productivity? That's compounded by the fact that we're building on foundations of potentially contaminated data, with 16 million fake accounts potentially skewing the landscape.
And the scramble for compute power 2 gigawatts to OpenAI isn't just a technical challenge, it's deeply geopolitical. The 30% user adoption of Alibaba's Akio agent points to a parallel AI ecosystem developing, and the predicted 3 new open source models from China by next year. That's a race to control the infrastructure, and increasingly to sidestep traditional research pathways through data distillation. It's less about build, buy, or borrow, and more about build, buy, distill, and bypass.
It's a shift from optimizing algorithms to optimizing access. Think of it like constructing a cathedral. You can have the most brilliant architects, but without the stone, the tools, and the workforce, the design remains unrealized. We're now acutely aware of the stone shortage. And the 80% of power consumption during inference, that's a constraint we haven't fully grasped. The focus is pivoting to the hardware layer. And frankly, the AMD ROCm reports will be critical in understanding if we're heading towards a concentrated power structure.
Which brings us back to safety. If we can't reliably evaluate what AI is doing, controlling its trajectory, especially as agents reach that February 2026 phase jump, feels precarious. We're not just correcting outputs anymore, we're trying to steer an optimization process we barely comprehend.
And the synthetic data debate, which we anticipate will explode next year, underscores the ethical complexity. Are we accelerating AI capabilities at the cost of verifiable truth? The 50 million pages of knowledge a typical worker possesses feels dwarfed by the potential scale of AI-generated content, but is that knowledge genuine?
So the unresolved tension is this. Are we on the cusp of a genuinely transformative technology, or building a house of cards on a foundation of manipulated data and unsustainable resources? The future of coding, the role of platforms like Pulsia, are they solutions or gatekeepers?
It's a jaggedness frontier. We're ascending layers of abstraction, but the underlying mechanics remain elusive. Ultimately, it's a race against uncertainty.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be digging deeper into the implications of synthetic data next week.